You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
One of the things that I do hear a lot of is that, traditional advice has been that singers shouldn't do strength training, they shouldn't do resistance training, they should only do things like yoga and Pilates. And I couldn't disagree more. I think that this kind of training is incredibly important. In fact, if we think about the kind of unified whole that we get from doing compound movements like, lunges and squats, you're really using the body as a unified whole. And the way in which that mirrors what we do in singing, the instrument isn't just here in the throat. It's a unified whole with the entire body. And a good sound is produced from the toes up, right? So it really, when I see students who are doing fitness training and they're doing it well, it really enables them to launch into that work with a holistic view of the body.
Hey, what's going on? Joe Roscoe here from Built for the Stage podcast. Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you haven't tried a free trial yet where you can work with your own Broadway fitness coach one-on-one online, check us out at builtforthestage.com, fill out the free trial form, and we'll be on our way to 7 days of jump-starting you to play center stage in this little show called Your Life. Billforthestage.com. Check us out. If you like the podcast, please rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We'd greatly appreciate it. Check out our YouTube channel. Check out the TikTok at Built for the Stage. All things social media. We'd love to see you on it. Can't get enough, right? Speaking of can't get enough, we typically have performers on the podcast, but today is going to be a special guest. I'm actually extremely excited about this one. We have a singing voice specialist that works with the who's who of Broadway, Tony Award winners, Grammy winners, Oscar nominees. He even has taught, coached Fortune 500 executives. I'm very anxious to talk about that as well. So we're going to bring on Mike Ruckles to the pod. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being on the podcast. Excited to not only talk about your experience as a singing voice specialist with amazing clientele that you have, but also just to give our listeners some expert advice from you on how to practice fitness while keeping your voice in the forefront of your focus. So first I want to jump into what we were talking about before the recording. For those of you that are listening, behind Mike, he has, I don't know, looks like 300 CDs or more. Tell us where you're calling in from and about all those CDs behind you.
Well, my voice studio is in Midtown Manhattan, but I'm currently in West Orange, my home in New Jersey across the river. And I'm in my basement office where I've been teaching from during the pandemic. And Joe just discovered that I haven't fully entered into the digital media era because I completely am obsessed with liner notes. And, when I buy an album online, I really miss being able to open it up and read those notes. So, that's me. I keep it all.
And you also said that you still work out with an iPod?
I do. And what, you know, when it dies, I'm going to be screwed because they don't make them anymore. I'm going to have to transfer over. But I love to have my whole library at my disposal. You know, I love to be able to get to it quickly. And I don't want to like weigh down my phone with all that music. So, you know, I'm kind of limited in my choices right now.
Was this a one-off project where like you sat down for 48 hours and put all of the music on your iPod at once, or like was this over time?
Well, you know, I think most of it was put onto iTunes way back when I lived in Colorado, so it was years ago. But you know, as I get a new album, I upload it.
Love it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we got connected. We have a lot of mutual clientele between the two of us, and I just wanted to jump in with that first question that I kind of emailed you and we were talking about. Bradley Gibson comes to mind, Miha, Adriana Hicks, all of these greats. As you've been, I mean, I'll say fortunate to work with such talent, but obviously the talent continues to come to you because you're a talented teacher yourself. As this talent continues to come through the years, what do you notice about these people that kind of sets them apart? Is it their natural ability or what makes them flourish?
Well, I think there are a few key elements that make a successful, exciting, in-demand performer. Of course, there's talent. There's that God-given gift that you can't be taught. You either got it or you don't. But as you know, it's what you do with that gift and how you seek to develop it that's integral, right? But beyond that it factor, I would say the singers that progress most quickly have an amazing capacity for something called proprioceptive recall. Now that's, you know, $1 million word, so I'll break that down. This gets into motor learning theory a bit. But what that means is that when I guide them into a particular coordination, be it postural, resonance, or maybe a vocal fold coordination, they're very good at taking what I call kinesthetic snapshots. So they can reliably recall what that coordination felt like somatically and also how they got there. With some mindful work and repetition, they can just drop the needle on that coordination very easily. And then they enter into what we're really after, which is called automaticity. And that's the point at which that skill or coordination becomes so ingrained that it's just like falling off a log, right? I'm sure you see this in the gym with folks, you know, some people, it feels like you start again at square one. You're like, okay, let's get things lined up again. Other people seem to be able to just go right back to what you taught them, right? Go return right to that coordination. Mm-hmm. The good news is I don't think you have to have been born with it. In fact, I don't think most of us are. I think with training and awareness, anyone can increase their capacity for proprioceptive recall. I see singers getting better and better at it all the time. Maybe at first they don't have a lot of awareness of, say, their soft palate. It's back there somewhere and Lord knows what it's doing. But over time, as they ask their body for specificity, and as their work becomes more mindful, they begin to make more neural connections and they can now feel and activate that soft palate with real precision.
How much of, so I do relate to this quite a bit when training clients, and I know what my answer would be, but I want to ask you, how much of it do you think is the ability to mentally free your mind and allow yourself to, I'll say, succeed? How much do you encounter that in the studio with, they have the ability, you would have to assume or believe, but yet the mind is really what's in the way?
Oh, all the time. Singing, like any athletic event, is a mind game. It's probably 90% of the mind and 10% of the body. You know, it's I see a lot of people in my profession and in our in the industry who are actually, they wouldn't say it out loud, they wouldn't maybe even think it consciously, but they're afraid of success. They're afraid of what that means if they suddenly level up, or even, you know, working a simple coordination or something like that. There's so many thoughts that are competing with their ability to just kind of focus in and really take in that instruction. So that can be an impediment.
I wanted to circle back to what I saw on your website. Everyone, you can view that in the description of this episode, which is just simply mikeruckles.com. But you had said that you mentioned you worked with Fortune 500 executives. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that is interesting work. Some of them actually, would you believe it or not, come to me interested in singing. The nature of their work may be very performative. They are having to be in a board meeting and really sell an idea or own that room in the way that we talk about owning the audition room or booking the audition room. Yeah. And so it's maybe an outlet. Maybe they loved singing as a kid and they are looking for a way to have a sense of, maybe it's therapy as well. You know, they're looking for an outlet and a creative outlet, but they're also aware that the skills that are required in performance, be it singing, awareness of their voice. Sometimes we're working singing with some of them. Actually, we're simply working the voice. We're talking about the habits, the tensions that are holding them back and creating maybe a strained voice. God knows, from Fauci to Hillary Clinton to a number of recent politicians, we've been hearing a lot about, boy, their voice sounds really rough, or they sound really, you know, it's hard to listen to them. And these, some of these Fortune 500 execs, they're very aware that the quality of their voice affects their leadership.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Tony Robbins off the top
yeah.
of my head.
Oh, yeah.
And I know now he does a lot of voice exercises and is working with a specialist, but if it's fair to say, it might be 10 or 20 years too late because there's been lots of damage that has been done. But obviously there's tactics to work through or around that. But I wanted to bring that up as well because we were talking about the mindset and that side of things, whether it be singing or speaking. I can only imagine these executives while they're up on the stage carrying that tension or that excitement of trying to get their message across. If they don't have the expertise from you or another professional to teach them these techniques, they're likely to hurt themselves over time. So that's very cool that, you know, you're not just on the performer side of things. Let's jump in though to the meat and potatoes, if you will, of the episode. I wanted to have you share your most valuable tips, and I can kind of chime in here and there, to singers that are looking to continue to work on their fitness, but do it in a safe way where they're not affecting the voice.
Yeah. And I have to admit, I am really excited to nerd out about this because I'm always very excited when my discipline can meet someone else's discipline and we can kind of see what the common denominators are and see what the how we can benefit one another. So that's, you know, I was thrilled when you invited me.
Yeah.
I think as we segue into these tips, we should probably preface it all with a really quick discussion about what's called the Valsalva maneuver, which people may or may not be familiar with. And I think the primary reason people have been so concerned about resistance training for singers comes down to that one thing, the Valsalva maneuver, V-A-L-S-A-L-V-A. So let's break that down really quick for folks who aren't familiar with what that is. The first thing we have to come to terms with is that the primary function of the larynx, the voice box in the body, is not to make sound. Most of us in the arts would assume, oh, the voice box, it's for making sound, right? But actually, the primary role of the larynx in the body is to act as a valve. So the vocal folds not only help to protect and clear the airway, but they can clamp together to hold back air and increase the pressure in your thorax. And that's called the Valsalva maneuver, when you attempt to exhale against folds that are closed tight. And we do that constantly, lifting heavy suitcases, going to the bathroom, giving birth. That buildup of pressure helps to stabilize the work and allows the muscles of the trunk and limbs to work with greater efficiency. During heavy lifting, it helps to support the pectoral girdle and it helps to equalize the pressure in the spine. Right. So some lifts, in fact, you know, I don't think we can do without the Valsalva maneuver. It's kind of integral. But as you can imagine, that's a real 180 from the way we use the larynx as an instrument to produce free and vibrant sound. So the more frequently you're valving and the more pressurized that valving is, the more likely you are to build up a lot of tension in the larynx and the musculature surrounding the throat. I see a lot of tongue and jaw tension, and I often see a chronically high larynx that's sort of been pushed upward and held upward by excessive force. You know, maybe you've noticed, Joe, that a lot of the biggest guys in the gym may either have a strangely high voice like Mike Tyson, or it may be very hoarse and strained, or both. Sure, sure. That's kind of a byproduct of excessive and intense Valsalva during lifting. And, you know, it may be also hormonal from roids. Who knows? There's a lot of stuff going on there sometimes. But it's clear that as singers, we want to actively avoid or at least mitigate that Valsalva maneuver. And I got to say, I got to pat Joe on the back because I've been catching up on your podcast. And the first thing that jumped out at me was what a beautiful speaking voice you have.
Oh,
it's really beautifully modulated. It's beautifully on the pitch. It's beautiful. You use a lot of range and melody. And I was like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. It's so good. So
you just made my day.
Good. I'm glad.
I'll have to forward this episode on to my former voice teacher. So
That's great.
To inflate his ego a bit.
Absolutely. So what should we do when we're working out to avoid clamping the cords together? That's basically what most of these tips are about, is how can we get the work done? How can we do it without so much Valsalva? Well, my first tip sounds simplistic, but it is simply to breathe. If you possibly can, you want to exhale while lifting and inhale while lowering the weight. And this is going to aid you in avoiding holding back the breath and pressing those cords together forcibly.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Yes.
To piggyback on that, first off, I love simple things. You said this is simple or sounds easy, but we all always say to our clients, if it sounds cliche, it's probably the number one thing you should listen to because there's a reason it is cliche.
Right.
So often we want to skip over the easy things and get to the, you know, sexy secrets, but really it's just the foundational simple things that are most important. Yeah, I think a lot of the time with keeping that breathing in check and the technical side of it, like you were mentioning, it's knowing your level of exertion based off of what you 100% could do physically, as opposed to what you should be feeling while keeping your voice, your singing voice in mind. Meaning, let's just put it to poundage. Could I squeeze out 5 reps at whatever, 100 pounds and give it my absolute best, but at the cost of the breathing you're talking about? Okay, that's my 100% as a non-performer. But if I'm going to consider myself a performer, then my 100% really needs to be probably my 70% so that I can keep that breathing technique intact.
Boom. You have just led me right into my tip number 2, Joe Roscoe, which is my second tip is more reps, less weight.
Okay.
So we often hear go big or go home. And I think many people are in the gym, lift exactly what you're talking about, lifting the maximum weight they can lift with good form, hopefully. But for singers, it's advisable to drop that weight a bit and instead add more reps. Something around, generally speaking, 10 to 12 reps is often a good range to operate in. And again, that's all about avoiding that Valsalva maneuver. And another modality that I love to recommend to singers is blood flow restriction, or sometimes called KAATSU, K-A-A-T-S-U. This is great for people whose goal is hypertrophy. In other words, they're less interested in simply toning or balancing the musculature, and they're more interested in size or, you know, getting swole like Joe Roscoe, and for me. And for actors, that's often a primary goal. You know, Joe, I'm sure that's one of the things you hear a lot. Maybe they've had an agent or a casting director say, hey, I think you need to bulk up a bit. It's going to help us to see you a little bit more clearly in your type, whatever. And so most of them go out and they start lifting the heaviest weight possible. And they're grunting and creating that really aggressive Valsalva maneuver. But blood flow restriction training, which has been around actually since the 60s, but it's only kind of recently been catching on. Maybe you've seen these folks in the gym with these odd bands or cuffs around their shoulders or elbows or knees. It allows them to restrict blood flow to the muscle that they're currently working and lift much lower weight with a lot more reps. And the results have been kind of amazing. It's been shown to be very effective at increasing hypertrophy, but without, obviously, a lot of Valsalva because you aren't lifting quite as much weight.
Yeah. And if you don't have those contraptions as well, another parallel would be working tempo lifts or things where you're holding at the top a rep, obviously holding while breathing, but keeping that muscle contracted where that blood flow is restricted. Another thing I'll just put in there, really kind of off topic to the voice or lifting, when people want to add size, so often, yes, they think, oh, I have to lift heavy, but they're putting off the nutritional aspect of things and that the main factor of growth is the nutrition intake. So I'm pretty amazed when I'm onboarding clients and I ask them, hey, could you just send me a couple of days of your food intake so I could take a look? And this particular, and forget about even like what they're eating, the quality, but the amount. And their number one goal is, you know, I want to put on size, this particular person, but yet they're barely getting in two meals throughout the day. And if those are meals at all. So anyways, that's a little side bunny trail,
What do they say? It's, it happens in the kitchen, not in the gym, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
All right. What do you got next?
All right. So this next tip, I have to give a shout out to my student. I think you know him, Stephen Mark Lucas. He is a personal trainer who's also a big fan of Built for the Stage. And he asks his clients to keep their tongue up as though they're saying ing and g while they're lifting, with the tip of the tongue also up against the roof of the mouth. And I love this because often when we lift, the base of the tongue wants to press down and back and close off the airway. And that's sometimes part of that Valsalva maneuver, even though it doesn't have to be. This is a great way to keep the airway free and to keep you from gripping or jutting the jaw. I'm sure you've observed people do all kinds of weird things with their jaw when they are lifting and their tongue. So it really kind of sets things in a way that they're out of the way and they're otherwise occupied.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And I love that the keeping the tip of the tongue also at the top will, it's like a constant cue, meaning if you lose contact with the tongue to the roof of the mouth, you now know that you've kind of gone astray.
That's
whereas
right.
Maybe if it's a physical technique, you're like trying to look at the mirror, trying to see what's happening. But here I like this where it's simply, do I feel my tongue still at the roof of my mouth or not? I don't know if you'll get into this as well, but you said, I'm sure you see a bunch of crazy things with the jaw or whatever. I see a bunch of crazy things in general.
Oh, yeah.
and one is talking about checking technique. One is performing a lift and trying to look at yourself from the profile. So let's say it's I see this often in a deadlift because people are very concerned about keeping their back straight and engaged, which they should be. However, while performing it, they have their head turned and their neck, I guess, out of alignment with the rest of their body as they're performing this. And if you're, which is also going to make it hard to breathe in the first place. But if you're
As though the head and neck are a separate entity from the rest of the spine.
Exactly. Right. So this is another huge red flag that I see, not only for the well-being of the voice, but just the safety of the body in general. So everyone listening, I would tell you, hey, if you are going to try to check form, do it without weights, do it at 20% speed. And then when you're actually going to do it, you know, keep that neck and head in alignment with the rest of the body.
I love that you said that, because this mirrors, and this is what I was excited about today, is looking for all the ways in which your work and your experiences in the gym mirror what I deal with in the studio. And all day, every day, I see people who are, well, right now it's all online, of course, but I see people who are trying to do the work. They're trying to be communicative with the voice while at the same time listening to themselves. They're trying to monitor, is it the right sound? Is it what the casting directors want? Is it this? Is it that? You can't do those things simultaneously. You either have to be doing the work or listening to yourself, right? And so it really mirrors what you just said. I think that is true across the board.
I'm having flashbacks to voice lessons where I'm trying to critique and coach myself in the midst of singing. I'm having nightmares.
I can't tell you how many students I say, let me be the teacher. You just turn off your brain for a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
Number four, there are very few things that are strictly forbidden in the gym. In fact, probably next to nothing, because I think anything can be done with modifications. It can be done with awareness, most lifts and exercises. But I do recommend that you steer clear of specifically shoulder shrugs. And just because they generally work all the wrong muscle groups for singers, and can create tension and shortening in the back of the neck and the occiput, which is sort of where the spine meets the skull. As singers, we want the back of the neck, the capitis muscles and the upper traps, we want them always long and released. And what shoulder shrugs tend to do is actually get them short and tight, right?
Yep.
So if you can possibly avoid those. Also, generally speaking, I'd say you want to avoid any exercise in which the head and neck are not being supported by, you know, either the bench or, you know, your posture.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of the times we'll see this with abdominal exercises when the head is having to be lifted. Yep. And we have clients that definitely do these exercises, but we stress that the instant that you aren't supporting yourself in a free, I'll say, way, take a break or stop the exercises for the day at that point. Because it's an obvious function to be able to lift the head off the ground, but you can only really support it for so long until you start to get some of that strain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Number five, last one, I would say avoid overtraining the rectus abdominis. Now, the rectus is that long paired abdominal muscle that we tend to think of as the six pack. So yes, it's a glamour muscle, but it's a tight, but a tight and inflexible rectus is going to seriously inhibit abdominal release when you inhale to sing. And it's also much more likely to clench during exhalation. What we want in good singing always is we want an easy release from the abdominal girdle. A lot of people think of the rectus as being the abs, but it's only one of many muscle groups that make up what we call the abdominal girdle, right? Sure. And we want an easy release from that abdominal girdle on inhalation. And then we want to see a very gentle, controlled, upward, inward movement from the abs as we sing. We want to keep that buoyancy and lift in the rib cage. A chronically tight rectus is going to interfere with just about all of that. This is also an issue I see with a lot of my dancers. You know, they've been told from day one things like hold the core, belly button to spine, every day in their training. And we have to really spend time actively reclaiming the flexibility in their abs. And most usually it comes down to the rectus. So we love toned abs. They're great. Tight abs are not, right?
Right. Yes.
And I will say I have singers in my studio who have 10 packs, it seems, but they're incredibly flexible incredibly flexible. So we just, you know, I say to them, from an abdominal perspective, we don't want to be that guy in the gym who's walking around, you know, well, your listeners can't see me, but, you know, with their arms almost out of their side, because there's no flexibility there, right?
We call those 24/7 suitcase carriers. The guys, they look like they're carrying two suitcases when really there's nothing in their hands at all.
Right. Exactly. So that's it for me. I think if we can train the abs and the core, that's so important for singing. It really is. Mm-hmm. We want to have stability. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, you know, I think one of the things that I do hear a lot of is that, you know, traditional advice has been that singers shouldn't do strength training. They shouldn't do resistance training. They should only do things like yoga and Pilates. And I couldn't disagree more. I think that this kind of training is incredibly important. In fact, if we think about the kind of unified whole that we get from doing compound movements like, you know, lunges and squats, you're really using the body as a unified whole. And the way in which that mirrors what we do in singing, the instrument isn't just here in the throat. It's a unified whole with the entire body. And a good sound is produced from the toes up, right? So it really, when I see students who are doing fitness training and they're doing it well, it really enables them to launch into that work with a holistic view of the body.
Love that. I wanted to end with a quote from your website. Don't get scared.
Very scared.
No. With my performers, I usually say, I was looking at your resume and I wanted to talk about your special skills. And I always get them sweating bullets about their special skills. But actually, I think it's a great conversation, a great topic for both of us, because I relate to this when coaching my actor athletes. So it's about a paragraph, so I'll just read it out. Everyone take a listen. As composers and audiences ask more of their performers, you ask more of your body and of your instrument. Whether you are a Broadway performer Broadway performer who must deliver vocal pyrotechnics, love that, vocal pyrotechnics, eight times a week, an opera singer who must perform at the very best a few times a month, or a pop singer who rocks out in a new venue every night, you instinctively understand the necessity of solid technique to see you through. All right. Second part of this that I really want to break down. I remember it well, the uneasiness of singing publicly, something I was supposed to love doing. I wonder if it's a good vocal day. I wonder if the planets will align. I wonder if that high, low note will be solid. Maybe if all goes well, the singing will just happen so I can actually communicate something. When things went well on stage, it was seemingly sheer luck. It never occurred to me that even after several well-intentioned teachers, my vocal toolbox was very nearly empty. So I wanted to read all of that. Thanks for bearing with me, hearing your own words, Mike, that were written out. But I wanted to talk about that where Built for the Stage, the intention is that we train the body so that when we get on the stage, it's not the toughest thing that we do, but yet it's something we've prepared the body to not only thrive in, but to perform safely. Mm-hmm. So what do you tell your students, or how do you press upon them the importance of not just getting it right the one time, but having the discipline to break down what you're giving them and truly understand the importance of having a well-balanced toolbox that you can just go to without thinking?
It's a good question. I think I don't want to overload them with information, because in that moment, you're standing center stage at, you know, the Gershwin, you're standing center stage at the Broadhurst. In that moment, there's really only one thing that should be on your mind. It should be what the intent is for that character, right? And hopefully, part of my philosophy in the studio is that I want to look at, what does Joe's body already know how to do as a human being? When he communicates, what is he doing? And what skills can we translate? So that rather than thinking about, you know, on this note, I'm aiming for 60% chest voice and 40% head voice, which, you know, those things don't really exist anyway. Instead of thinking about those sorts of things, what verb can you latch on to? What is the character's verb here? To speak, to whine, to cry, to whimper, to, you know, what can you do there? And what innate intuitive response will your body give you? And then, of course, we have to look at what intuitive innate responses might not be helpful and how do we guard against those? But usually I don't have to convince my clients that they are in need of a full toolbox. They generally are coming in the door going, I got no tools and I really need some. You know, which is great. That's the wonderful thing. They really do. I think I often say to them, maybe this is the best way to answer your question. When in doubt, if you're not sure, here comes that high note, you're not sure what to do, reach into your bag of tools and pull out any tool, any tool at all. It might be the wrong tool, but applying something, being specific, this is like acting, right? Yeah. If I go for that moment, I'm not sure what I'm going to play, nothing's going to play. But if I can be specific, it may not be the perfect choice that I've made, but it will be better than what was about to happen, right? So often better to just reach into that bag of tools and just pull something out.
Yeah, I love that. In compound movements, but specifically Olympic lifting, where there are multiple cues on cues on cues that you need to be able to execute. When approaching a lift like that, typically we say to ourselves, just pick one cue to focus on, and that usually will see you through to accomplishing the entire task.
Right.
So I love what you just said there.
Exactly right.
Mike, anything that you wish to have shared that we didn't cover today? I'm just bubbling over this. It was everything that I hoped to be.
Good. I'm so glad. Well, you know, if people have questions or they have thoughts or they, you know, they want to lynch me, they can find me certainly through the website or through my Instagram, which is just Ruckles Voice. But really funny enough, I want to just, because I've been catching up on your podcast, I just want to really pat you on the back, Joe, because it's an extraordinary podcast. And you actually are a really unique host in that I find that a lot of podcast hosts are more kind of in love with listening to themselves talk. And you are just an extraordinary listener, which I think is huge. So, I mean, keep this up. This is such a gift to our community. It really is.
I appreciate that. That's so kind of you to say. All right, Mike, thanks for being on Built for the Stage podcast.
My pleasure.
All right, everyone, that'll do it with Mike Ruckles. Thanks so much to Mike again for joining the podcast. If you want to try a free trial, head on over to the website, builtforthestage.com. And if you want to see more about Mike, his website is also in the description of this episode. Until next time, later.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.